come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter, weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to fandom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
Doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. So who do we have on tonight?
Oh, man. Tonight, we have not just one, but two special guests. We are joined by the co-founders of Perception. We have Danny Gonzalez and Jeremy Lasky here. Their company, Perception, is a Emmy-nominated visual effects studio and design lab. They've been working on the Marvel Cinematic Universe since Iron Man 2, and they've been credited on all their big hits and TV shows. They've also been nominated for some Emmys, and it's a real pleasure having you guys on the podcast. How's it going, Danny and Jeremy?
Great. Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Definitely. Thanks for coming on. We're excited to talk to you guys. How long ago did you guys co-found Perception?
2001.
2001?
Yeah. Birth date.
It's coming up on 20 years.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Could you guys give us kind of like an origin story of how that came to be?
I'll try to keep it as short and sweet as possible. This is a story we could both tell for hours if we're left to it. Danny and I know each other way before Perception. We met at a company in New York, which is a legendary visual effects studio called RGA, also known as R. Greenberg Associates. And that was a world-renowned design studio in New York that was very famous initially for title sequence design. They were the company that did the very first Superman titles in 1978, but throughout the 80s and 90s, they did hundreds and hundreds of titles like The Untouchables and Alien, all the way through Seven, which was a very groundbreaking title sequence in the mid-90s. And that's where I went to work right out of college. Danny was there as well, pretty soon after he got out of school. We were in different departments. I was in the design department. Danny was in visual effects, but we got to know each other there. Done a lot of different projects over the years, a lot of commercials, television work, a little bit of film work, though not as much as both of us would have liked. Because while we were there, the company was in the middle of, I guess, an evolution heading into the digital space. You know, slowly but surely, they were getting more involved in web design and websites, very primitive days back then. But ultimately, in, I guess, 2000, RGA decided we're no longer doing anything film or television related, visual effects related.
Oh, man.
We're going to be a solely digital interactive design agency. So they basically went all in on the .com, tidal wave that was kind of cresting at the time, in New York, Silicon Valley, and everywhere else. So that really was a crossroads for both of us. They had given the staff that was still doing the film work and the visual effects work, which had shrunk a lot over the time we were there, and they were really just kind of feeding the interactive end of the company. But they gave us warning. They said, basically, you have a few months left and we're closing the quote studio doors. You're welcome to see if there's a fit for you in the new agency, the new model that we're all in on, or you can, transition to the marketplace. So, those are the moments in life where, you look back on it and you're grateful for it because you wonder if that didn't happen, would you ever had taking the risk or the chance to do what we ultimately did, which is, start our own company and, 20 years of action and excitement. But the two of us left. Danny actually stuck around a little bit. I left very soon after we were, given that notice. I started freelancing around New York, doing some motion graphics. I'd gotten pretty big into After Effects at RGA. I'd learned everything there about it. When I went to school, it was very traditional graphic design. So RGA really taught me animation and, using digital tools, create, motion graphics. So I had, I was freelancing at the time, but I also was working with another startup, which was also like a .com agency. I kind of got pulled into that, which didn't go anywhere, but we were in constant contact with each other and we were talking about starting our own thing. And, we were both getting more and more involved in digital video and the DV revolution and, what could be accomplished, on the desktop with Final Cut, which was pretty young. It was in its infancy then, After Effects, which was just getting better and better. Danny came from a flame and inferno world. I'm sure he'll get into his story a little bit, but we decided to do it. And, throughout 2000, 2001, we laid the groundwork for it. And then in the fall of 01, you know, we officially incorporated as Perception in Danny's Kitchen in Queens. And the company started off, you know, as most companies do, very slowly. It wasn't an overnight success by any means. Hit the pavement. We went door to door. We did whatever we had to do to try to get people's attention and land our first gig. Called everybody we knew in both of our networks. You know, there's no LinkedIn. You know, there's no social media. We didn't have a website. I mean, this was literally like making videotapes. And we, Danny used to sneak into RGA at night and to copy them because we had to have like stacks of these tapes. I mean, this is old school, guys. You know, we had all these tapes and we would mail them out, FedEx them, Messenger, spending, you know, a fortune, cutting out labels, all that crap. But, you know, our first big break was with an HBO Sopranos campaign in 2002. And that just slowly led us into the broadcast world. So over the first 10 years, we were all broadcast or mainly broadcast designs. We worked with all the major broadcast networks like HBO, ESPN, Showtime, Bravo, you name the network, we did work with them. And then a few ad agencies over those years too, doing some commercial work, doing some editing, doing some live action production, of course, compositing and visual effects, everything that we could accomplish on the desktop. But I'll pass the baton at the turning point for us, which was Iron Man 2. And that's a whole other evolution of where we went. So you want to pick it up from there, Danny?
Before we get into Iron Man 2, though, when you did found your company, were you planning on doing mostly like broadcast type work? Was that the idea of like doing these commercials or not really?
We were just doing whatever we could do to make a buck, man, to be honest. You know, you start a company and then you realize you have all these bills, you got rent, you know, to go back in time a little bit to where Jeremy and I met, you know, when we first started Perception, it was actually the birth of my daughter. So my daughter is exactly the same age or almost same age as Perception.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It is awesome, but you know, it also like freaks me out when I'm like walking past her and I'm just like, what? It's funny because we're both from New York and I love to tell the story because when I first met Jeremy, they're like, hey, you're going to meet, you know, Jeremy, he's a designer. So the way RGA was set up, it was, I guess we were all divided, so to speak. So there was like the visual effects division and there's the design division and there's a 3D group and stuff like that. So we were always like, you know, you can't do the frames because Jeremy's doing frames. It was very separated. So when we met, you know, they were like, you're going to meet Jeremy. You're going to work with him on his projects. Great. Okay, cool. I met him, you know, as soon as he said he was from Brooklyn and I'm from Queens, it was already like a little bit of a, whoa, what's going on here? You know, it's like meet out back. It's going to be a throwdown.
Did you guys hate each other at first?
Oh, yeah.
Nah. I mean,
it looks like Jeremy did. Yeah.
For about an hour.
He warmed up.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, we realized that, you know, we were working together and everybody always said, like, you guys are the fastest or you guys do this. And we work good as a team. So we're like, you know, when we decided to start thinking about, you know, putting our own company together and things like that, I was like, man, we got everything we need. You got the visual effects, you're the designer, like, we could do everything. It was a little bit different for me because Jeremy was in the After Effects world. I was in the Flame and Inferno world. So I had to take all my knowledge and pretty much pester Jeremy into showing me how After Effects works and then kind of rework my brain to make it work on a desktop and do other different things, which took a little bit. But, you know, after a while, literally I was doing stuff on the train coming in for projects and I would be tracking and stuff on a laptop. And it was just like, I would never be able to do this anywhere else without like kind of like toolkit that Jeremy and I put together, because we were almost like the I don't want to date myself, but like the grandfathers of the desktop revolution. You know, I mean, he mentioned DV. We were actually doing tapes on 3/4 inch. I don't even know if you guys were born then. And that's what we would send to clients, because that's what they had, these 3/4 inch decks that were the size of like a 65 inch TV that you would slide this tape into and it would play this, you know, this video. So fast forward to, you know, working on HBO and all the other stuff. It was just, you know, part of it was, you know, you got to just do it because you own your own company and you do everything. But the other part was, it was amazing because like we learned so much together, not only how to become like just creatively more, I guess, enhanced, but also, you know, realizing that like, you know, we're running our own company and like we're learning as we go. And there was just so many things that we couldn't even think of, honestly, that like just popped up and we're just like, what do we do? What do we do? And some of it was like the right decisions. Some of it was just like, man, that was just like really bad to do, but all right, move forward, you know, because the worst decision you can make is not making one at all.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like if you just pull, you just got to pull the trigger. And if it works, cool. If it doesn't, you just pull another pivot. Make it work.
You know, one of the things that we did from day one was create a dream list of clients, of brands that we would love to work with, work for.
How many of those dream lists are still around?
Of our original list?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got through most of them.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
But, you know, just to give you guys a little context, you know, the two of us are Marvel fanatics from childhood. You know, Danny obviously loves Spider-Man, being from Queens and everything. He collected comics. I collected comics. Of course, it was always Marvel. I'm a fanatic with the Hulk. I grew up with the, you know, live action series, Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno. And I used to run around.
Hold on. Wait. I got to interrupt. 1 second. The fanatic is not even the word. All right. His first dog was named Bixby.
May rest in peace.
Yeah. But like, if you go into Jeremy's gym, it's called the Gamma Lab. Like, he's got this whole, like, it's out of control. Like, I used to work out with a guy and I'm just
built
like,
in during the COVID quarantine. That home gym.
But my son's 2.5 and he actually loves the Hulk. It's his favorite. Yeah. He knows Hulk Smash and everything. And I'm a hardcore Batman fan, so it kind of breaks my heart a little bit. But he is absolutely obsessed with the Hulk, and it's so funny.
Batman, man, I'm getting off this podcast.
Yeah.
The thing with the timing of when we were born, you know, it sort of coincided with MCU's birth. Mm-hmm. Not the phase one as we know it, but this is going back to like the first X-Men movie. With Hugh Jackman, Bryan Singer, you know, that came out in 2000, which is probably the very first Marvel film that was, you know, really taken seriously. I mean, you can go back to some B movies they did in the 90s
I think everyone Blade,
and, you know, there was a Fantastic Four, and there was a Captain America that went like straight to video.
I didn't even know about that one.
Yeah. But you know, don't look it up. Came out, and then in 2002, the first Spider-Man movie came out with Tobey Maguire, which is, you know, incredible. Mm-hmm. Groundbreaking. First time we ever saw, you know, photoreal Spider-Man swinging through Manhattan.
Yeah.
And at that time was, you know, this news that there was a Hulk movie in pre-production. And that was the Ang Lee train wreck.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I didn't know at the time was going to be as bad as it was. I just heard like Hulk movie.
That's all he needed to hear.
We wanted to get into title sequence, you know, with Perception. That was something that I loved at RGA. That was actually the only reason I ever applied for a job at RGA was because that's the place to go if you want to do titles back then. So, you know, one of the things that was part of the, you know, dreams of Perception was to get into some film title work. So film title work, there's Marvel movies, there's a Hulk movie. Like it lit an inferno in us to try to get the attention of Ang Lee and his production company. But then ultimately that just became Marvel in general. And we tried, you know, for 10 years or 9 years to do that, to get their attention, both the New York group and, you know, ultimately it was the West Coast team that, you know, that gave us the opportunity of a lifetime. But, you know, if it wasn't for that Ang Lee movie or the fact that the Hulk was, you know, being made as a film, I'm sure I would have, you know, been as excited with the other, you know, Marvel films that came out, but that really like created this oh my God, man, we were sending this guy like my Hulk collectibles. Like I just sent them in the mail to this guy.
I think we actually sent a Hulk
boogie board.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were out of control. I mean, there was like a laser focus, like Jeremy said, or like this tenacity that we were just like, we're going to get an opportunity with these people. Like if they're not going to give it to us, we're going to make it, you know, it's kind of like the New York attitude, like never say die kind of a thing. But at one point, you know, they actually did call us and we were like, we're going to be there tomorrow. You know, me and my big mouth, you know, I was like, yeah, we'll be there tomorrow. And they're like, oh, well, you should come by. And I hang up the phone. I'm like, dude, book tickets because we got to be there in like 12 hours. You know, we got no time.
I think what do you think made that call happen?
I think at that point they might have seen a couple of like Hulk things that we sent their way. And we were like, you know, just constantly hitting people and talking. And finally, we, you know, they gave us an opportunity to talk to somebody. For all I know, I probably said something like, oh yeah, I'm calling back so-and-so, you know, like it's just trying, I'm returning his call.
Right.
And then we got the opportunity to show some work. And then we actually went there and we showed, you know, we'll call it like pitch ideas or just ideas that we had in general. And they loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they were like, listen, you know, we're not working on the Ang Lee thing. You know, that's kind of like a separate thing. Yes, it's Hulk, but it's not, you know, Marvel Studios. But we do have this other division, and this other division happened to be Marvel Animated. It was all DVD series, right? So people that ran that division I believe was also Kevin, Victoria, and Lou, which you know as Kevin Feige, Victoria Alonso. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know the names, right?
Yep.
And Lou D'Esposito, who's a huge Knick fan, by the way. I got to give him props for that. So, you know, we went in there and showed him some stuff. They loved the ideas. I guess we made an impression because we stayed in touch, but we also started working on these DVD releases, and those were, you know, they were given to us as like, hey, you know, we'll give you a shot at one of these and see how it works out. And funny enough, the first one that we worked on was, and I do love Spider-Man, but Hulk's Jeremy's favorite and Wolverine's my favorite.
Yeah.
Right? So okay. I love me some Logan. So basically we get this opportunity and they're like, we're like, all right, well, what's the project? And they're like, well, it's Hulk versus Wolverine.
Yeah.
And I was like,
what? <that's it." laughs>
You know, and it was like HD, 2 minutes, no money. And we were like, we're doing it. Who cares? We're going to do it anyway.
Was it the title sequence for that? Okay.
Yeah, yep. We did the title sequence for it. And
I think it's on Disney Plus. I think all those films are,
yeah,
you know, in the animated section.
The cool thing was that, you know, we came from this world again, from RGA, and they used to shoot a lot of this stuff. You know, they used to build in 3D, but 3D used to take forever. So it was just like, all right, let's just do two scenes in 3D and then we'll get away with what we can shoot, you know? So Jeremy found this lab up in like, I don't know, it was like a 2-hour train ride. It was like MIT.
Upstate New York somewhere.
It was just crazy. And they were able to redirect lasers and like all this crazy stuff. And Jeremy's like, this is it. Like, this is where they're building the next Hulk. So we're going to go there and we're going to shoot inside the lab. And he got us in and we were shooting all this crazy, crazy stuff. And a lot of the stuff that we shot was the open.
Okay.
Creative brief for that was that the two characters were born from science. They were born in a lab, both Wolverine mm-hmm. and Hulk. So they wanted a sequence that really conveyed that. And given the fact that the budget was so low and the time was so short, the only way to make this happen was to actually go out and make these, you know, shoot these elements live, create these elements in reality versus building a whole CG sequence that would never have been feasible. So that's what led to the discovery of this place. And yeah, we just took the train up and we got a ton of footage that day and came back and, you know, had a week or two to put it all together with some graphics on top and a couple of CG things throughout to hold it all together. And it turned out really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, was it just you two working on that project?
No, at that point we had a full team. You know, okay. This was, I don't know, 2007, 2006, seven in that range probably. And yeah, we had already grown our staff and our team a little bit from just the two of us for sure.
All right. And so then after that, you guys got Iron Man 2 shortly after?
No, we had to do a couple of those title sequences.
Okay, a couple of those title sequences.
Just to gain some trust and let them know they can depend on us and stuff like that.
One of the, one of the I guess, marks against us at that time, you know, when we had first gotten a meeting with some of the Marvel executives, all we had really to show besides our ideas that we came up with for both Iron Man and Hulk, and this was the next Hulk, by the way, the one that, you know, Ed Norton was in by that point, you know, it was the first Iron Man and that Hulk reboot was in pre-production. And that was when we reconnected with some of the Marvel execs and went out there and we put together some ideas for Iron Man and Hulk completely unsolicited. They didn't ask for it. We didn't know anything about the movie. It's like, you know, I don't have a script. I didn't have any inside scoop on it. We just know the characters and we put together these visuals and, you know, we showed it to them, but they also saw our reel and our portfolio. And the mark against us was that our work is all broadcast. It's all television, right? You know, we're great for that, but that's all we really had. And when the Iron Man 2 opportunity came, it came because somebody who was instrumental in all of this for us, whose name was Jeremy Latcham, who was a, you know, producer on many of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films, you know, saw us as a, you know, great design studio, but wanted to give us an opportunity to animate the logo for the Stark Expo, which was, you know, at the beginning of Iron Man 2. And figured this was something that we could handle, you know, because we were totally unproven, except, you know, on a television screen. And that was something that felt very broadcast, because it really was just kind of like a projected, you know, logo animation in a way for like a giant television screen. So he had given us a call in the summer of 2009, asked if, you know, we had time, had the bandwidth, like whatever. Turn that down, right? To create this, you know, logo, we got a little backstory of, you know, what the Stark Expo was. And literally they gave us a week to do it. because they were actually shooting this thing live. It wasn't, you know, comped into the scene later. This was actually on set, projected behind Robert, because Favreau loves to do things, you know, in camera. And of course, we, you know, dropped everything. We came up with like 30 ideas in like 2 days, you know, and presented all these ideas to them. And one of the ideas that they did not pick was actually something that they were looking at. So that would be really cool for Tony's glass phone. And we had, you know, it was a very futuristic design. And we all heard that. And that was something that we kind of, let's hold that thought for a minute. And then we delivered the Stark Expo logo animation, delivered it in a week. They were thrilled, you know, no problem, you know, mission accomplished. And they basically said, you know, we'll call you if we need you guys. Thanks so much. You know, appreciate all your hard work. And, you know, that like after 10 years trying to get the, you know, this company to notice us and give us an opportunity, we had the opportunity, but we weren't about to let that be it.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, Danny and I were like, all right, what else can we do? We got to keep this going. We cannot just let, you know, another 10 years go by.
One and done.
Yeah. So what about that glass phone? Like, why don't we make a test? You know, why don't we just, we're reaching for whatever seeds they gave us that we could, you know, use to, you know, maybe get their attention again. So this is the story of the smartphone we did in a weekend, which was basically just taking, you know, a piece of plexiglass that we got at Home Depot and putting together this incredible motion test with the team, full sound design. And, you know, our creative director's hands are in the video, like, you know, miming a whole sequence. Again, knew nothing about this film. You know, we knew Iron Man 1, huge fans of that. We didn't know, you know, what the storyline was for this film, other than the rumors that, you know, we all followed. But we just want to show off a little bit. Here's what we could do with a glass phone. Here's what it could look like. Here's what Jarvis could do, because, you know, he was already introduced in the first film. Sent that off, I think, on a Monday. And, you know, we were all very excited about it, very confident. We thought, all right, get ready. The phone's going to ring. You know, as soon as we hit the send button on the email, the phone's going to ring and everybody's life's going to change. And then the phone didn't ring. And the phone didn't ring that day or the next day or the next week or probably for a couple of months.
Oh, wow.
And then I believe it was like November. It was later in the year when we had all but forgotten about it. You know, still licking our wounds from not, you know, getting anywhere with that. Got an email one morning from the producer with some, you know, secret instructions of how to access some shots and some clips and some footage that they wanted us to take a look at and put a bid package together for, which was, you know, mind blowing, because in that bid package were some shots where he's on his phone. So it turned out that it just took them a little while. They're very busy people to see the test that we had sent. We never did a bid package before, certainly for a film of this scope. So we went through all these shots. I mean, there was so much material to sift through, and seeing Robert on set, you know, improvising with nothing around him, but pretending there's holograms in Jarvis, you know, it's amazing. We finally got some shots. It started out small, but little by little, it just started to snowball. And by the end of the, I don't know, 4 to 6 months that we worked on it, not continuous, but, you know, broken up over 4 to 6 months, probably did over 120 shots.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's awesome. It's a great story.
It wasn't a title sequence, but, you know, in many ways it was just as good, if not better, because it, you know, we'll talk about where that took perception after Iron Man 2. But suffice it to say that all the work in Iron Man 2 was centered around Tony's technology and, you know, his futuristic smart home and, you know, his surfaces around his house and all the holograms that we got to contribute to. So that was a game changer for us.
You guys are the pretty much kind of the go-to for title sequences, especially for like the Marvel shows on Disney and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the go-to place, but we're the Emmy nominated go-to place.
If they want an Emmy, you know, like maybe you're the guys they call, right? They want to be nominated.
Yeah, if they want some sort of award, you know, you get perception on the phone.
Should be a business card. It's awesome.
Yeah.
After Iron Man 2, at what point, when did they start calling you to like come back, like recurring for their next movies? Was there a gap or did you guys have to sweat for a while?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit. It was not a smooth ride, Iron Man 2. You know, to be honest, it was a huge learning curve. We didn't say no to anything they asked us to do. You know, sure, we could do everything you needed and more.
It was kind of like, you know, when there's like an avalanche and like all the snow's on top of you. And then you like, finally you break three, like breathe. And then someone says, do you need help? Or do you want me to throw more snow on top of you? It's like, no, throw more snow.
Come on. It's an avalanche.
I don't need to breathe right now. Just keep it coming.
So I'm guessing that you may have been asked to do something that you weren't sure that you could do. And you said yes. And you just had to figure it out.
I don't know if we weren't sure how to do it. Cause we had, you know, Jeremy and I came from this school of RGA where we pretty much did everything. But the issue was that now we're on the desktop. So speed is maybe could be an issue depending on what they want us to do. I mean, we weren't building the actual Iron Man suit, but you know, there was a lot of elements that we had to build, put together and composite and make sure, you know, his hair looks good because he's on green screen. And if like one little section is clipped from Robert's hair, you know, you got to track it. There was like so many details. It was just incredible. It was just more of a time thing.
I got you.
We never had to, or we would never put through that much or that close scrutiny on every shot and every, and it's a testament to Marvel and their greatness and their standards, right? And all the, you know, the artistry of their team, that they're looking at everything under a microscope. And, you know, when we're working for the television clients that we had, everything was like, all right, get this out in a week.
Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest difference between I hear from people from film and television is like, television is just so quick paced. Like, you don't have time to fix stuff. You just go.
Yeah. And they're not looking at it on a, you know, an IMAX screening room, you know, they're looking at it in an edit suite, you know, on a 20 inch monitor. Yeah. I mean, I think we did like 70 to 80 versions of like one shot, like 1 2-second shot. Like, can you imagine 70 versions of just like, you know, one hair's off or there's a pixel buzzing or something, you know, it's like the color is just a little, you know, a degree too cool or too warm, stuff like that. That was our real education.
Also, the fact that Marvel would also ask like questions about like, well, why? Why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? And that started to kind of stick to us. And to this day, it's like, all right, well, if we're going to do this cool hologram, like what's the reason for it? It can't just be like a cool hologram because everybody can do a cool hologram. It's like, why is it spinning the way it is? Or why is it giving us this little bit of, I guess, extra special sauce on it to explain like the storyline. So I think that's one of the reasons that I would hope that's one of the reasons that they keep coming back to us is because we add like this personality to all the different graphics and all those personalities are different with each obvious character. So Tony and his graphics, so to speak, have their personality and Black Panther and those graphics have their personality and, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, so we kind of developed this whole thing like, all right, we're doing S.H.I.E.L.D. It's got to be very military looking. It's got to be, you know, just to the point. Sam Jackson is just like, I don't need glitz and glamour. Give me what I need. You know, give me a gun. I don't need it to shine kind of a thing. So that's something that we learned as well. You know, I mean, you know, there was a couple of times where we actually flew to LA and we'd be in the room with everybody and Jon Favreau. And, you know, he'd just be saying things to us. And we're just like, wow, it's of course. Why wouldn't it be that way? You know? And I think that definitely stuck with, especially Jeremy and myself. And then we kind of kept that or knocked that knowledge into the team. And it's like, you know, we can't just build cool stuff to be cool. It's got to like, what is it telling? It's got to tell the story. It's got to help tell the story. It's got to add to the dimension of this character. Like it's, you know, their personality. So
did you have much storytelling in your work, like with television and commercials and stuff like that? Or was this kind of a new thing?
You know, we would get a call from like ESPN and say, hey, it's the, 100th anniversary of Yankees and you got until Friday to do it. Well, like, we got a call Monday and it's like, you got till Friday. It goes on air Friday for the weekend. And I look at Jeremy like, dude, we just like, they already hung up on me. Like, what are we doing?
I'm sending over the script. They're sending over the script. Track. Yeah.
So like, I'm sitting there, I'm doing voiceovers like tonight on ESPN, you're going to watch the Yankees, you know, like doing all this crazy stuff. Jeremy and I are trying to come up with concepts. And then finally, we're just like, hey, why don't we just project cool footage on an old Yankees pinstripe, like a jersey? So we took a shot at it. We show, you know, we go buy a Yankee jersey because I don't have a Yankee jersey. Take pictures. We send it to the client. They're like, it's a great idea. And then just do it. It's like, all right, well, I don't even. All right. So we just started doing it. Done by Friday. Like that was, there was no story. It was really, I mean, sometimes we had to tell a story, but it was more about, you know, we'd capture like a moment in time, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, you knew it was Yankees, you knew like there was history there, but it was never like specific Derek Jeter and his story. You know, that's why I feel like the Marvel stuff was, it was more very specific to the character. And, you know, again, growing up, it was like the Marvel Universe, that magazine that tell you the encyclopedia, I think it was called Marvel Universe, right, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you guys. And, you know, you'd look up Silver Surfer and you'd know, okay, this is his powers, you know, weakness, not that he has one, but, you know, stuff like that. So I think, like what you said, you know, with the broadcast, it was down, dirty, get it done, make it look cool, you know, make it eye-catching and make people want to sign up for HBO to see the next season of Sopranos or Sex and the City. But that's all it was, you know, right. Whereas with Marvel, it's like, and especially now we get involved before the movies even start. So we really get to not necessarily dictate the story, but say, you know, bring up certain things or like, you know, Wakanda's technology and how they're actually talking, you know, communicating, things like that. But I might be jumping ahead, but that's a dream project right there.
So during the time of like the Iron Man 2, were you still doing like broadcasting work or were you kind of just really focused on film?
No, that we had plenty of other projects going on, you know, while we were working on that before, during and after.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It never really stopped until, I don't know, maybe around 2011, 2012, it really started to slow down the broadcast work. And we went more fully into the film and the tech world that Iron Man 2 really ushered in for us.
Yeah, we actually made a conscious decision. We were just like, you know what? No more broadcast, no more agency. We'll do film and we're going to do tech. So on the science fiction side, we kind of come up with all this crazy futuristic technology. And on the tech side of the business, we're doing it for real.
And when did you guys start doing like the tech? Was it like after Iron Man 2? Like you just like, all right, let's start focusing on tech?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that almost happened overnight. You know, we got all kinds of attention from the tech world because of the work in the film. And we were featured in several blogs at the time, like Engadget and Gizmodo and a few others. And all of a sudden we started getting inquiries from tech companies that were really interested in collaborating with us on some real world user interfaces and UX challenges that they were trying to solve. And they thought, you know, that our team's unique cinematic approach would be a really unique perspective. So, you know, we were like, sure, we'll take a crack at it. You know, I'm talking about companies like Microsoft and IBM and Samsung, a few, you know, really interesting startup companies that from different parts of the globe started reaching out to us. And, you know, at the time, you know, this was like 2009, 2010 was not a great time. Economy, housing bust and, you know, financial crisis, and ad agencies were laying people off, and, you know, broadcast networks that we were family with at that point were asking us to pitch things for free. And, you know, their budgets are being cut. And, you know, a lot of things were happening around us with our past, you know, the industries that we were used to working in that weren't happening, film world and the tech world that we were working in. So it was a pivotal moment for us because we started to veer away from where we had been. And I, you know, in hindsight, it was a very smart move because we had to do it to evolve and to survive. A lot of our competition at the time didn't make it through that period. You know, there were companies we used to pitch against constantly for the first 10 years that they're gone, they're long gone. And they got chewed up during that really rough patch. We held on to just doing broadcast work or ad agency work, I doubt we would still be here. So, you know, it's important to continue to adapt and, you know, be mindful of your surroundings, as they say in Batman Begins, because it's one of the, I think one of the keys for our longevity is just constantly trying to skate to where the puck is going. Another line I love.
So with technology, though, how did that kind of evolve into like cars and stuff?
So after Iron Man 2, like Jeremy said, we got a lot of calls from different companies. And then we got some calls that were just like kind of crazy, like redesign the software that the instructors use for a flight simulator.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, we get the call, like we even got a call to build a tablet from a company overseas. And I was just like, Jeremy, is this you on the other? Like, is this you? I was like this because, you know, you get a call. And it's like, I want you to build an Iron Man 2. You know, I want it to look like it's going to be a tablet, going to, you know, go against the iPad and all that. But I want it to look like Tony Stark's tablet. And I'm like, Jeremy, stop, you know, like stop. But it turned out it was real company. And we actually built it. But to go back to the flight simulator, you know, with Iron Man 2 being a stepping stone and a learning process for us, a lot of these technology projects also became, you know, stepping stones and learning processes for projects to come. So, you know, doing that flight simulator led to our first, I think it was our first car project, which was a 2017 Ford GT. I'm old, so I might be going a little senile, but Jeremy can correct me if I'm wrong. But I believe that's kind of what nailed it for us for that project on Ford. Because when they saw it, they knew we could do cool stuff. And they were just like, you know, you guys work on Marvel. Of course, that's awesome. But like a lot of our technology work, we can't show unless it's in like a private showing. So, you know, we showed the flight simulator, and what that person said at Ford was like, one of the things that knew I was working with the right team, or I needed to have you guys come, was this flight simulator, because you guys made it look so cinematic and so effing cool that we just have to have you work on this project. And that's not that simple, but that's pretty much kind of like the way, the process in which we got the first car. And I'm a Ford freak, man. Talk about Jeremy and the Hulk. You know, I do like Wolverine, but I love me my Fords, man. I got like Mustangs, and it's crazy. It's crazy.
You know, just like we did with Marvel, you know, it ended up coming down to making that list of brands that we wanted to work with, and literally going in person to meet teams there, meeting them at conferences like CES. But yeah, I remember, I don't know, long time ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, we took a trip to Detroit. Met with Ford, met with GM, met with, you know, FCA, all three of them in like 2 days, you know, full show and tell, got to meet different teams in the design and creative wings of the departments. Again, not overnight by any means, but over the years, all of those meetings ended up in projects and in long-term engagements now, you know, many years later. But it just started with like, all right, let's go to Detroit. Let's meet the big three. You know, we've gone to Silicon Valley many times and met with Mercedes's, you know, technology lab, and Audis and Volkswagens, BMW. So it really just came down to like targeting, you know, brands that we love, cars that, you know, we think are on the cutting edge, following them in the news and in the trades, and seeing what's on the horizon for them, and seeing if we believe we could add value. And certainly when you have a passion and a genuine enthusiasm for a brand, you're going to bring that much more to it.
Definitely, yeah.
That was one of our very first pitches to Marvel. I mean, I go back to a letter I wrote to Kevin Feige in 2007, and I still have it. And it literally said, you will not find a team more passionate about Marvel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, I think that's really important, you know, because certainly they were using vendors at the time for their title sequences, and I knew who they were. And I know that I'm
like, those are DC fans.
Well, they just did title sequences. They were a title sequence, you know, shop, and they just did them all at the time. But, you know, there was just something about like having that, you know, love and passion in your heart and soul for this, for these characters, for the brand, for what they represent, for, you know, the history and the legacy of it all. It's just, you know, it was unmatched. And that really drove both of us, because we knew that, you couldn't top what we already had, you know, for these companies, you know, showing up and bringing that, you know, in the room with you, I think was really evident, you know, in everybody we met with.
Just so you know, we never spoke badly about anybody. We all we did was out design them. So
right. No, that's good.
All, you know, when you go to a Marvel pitch and you know, like they put you in the same room with all the companies, and you know, it's like, a couple of times we went down and we pitched, you know, and a couple, you know, you're in the same room, and again, you know, this is my New York personality. I'm just like, man, in the back of my head, I'm like, we are gonna take you down. But you know, outside I'm like, hey, nice to meet you, good luck, you know. And then I walk away, and me and Jeremy are having lunch, and I'm just like, man, we killed it, dude, we got it. And then he's like, no, don't, you know, maybe not. And then 2 seconds later we get a phone call. It's like, you might as well come back, because you guys want it. It's everybody else showed us nonsense. So
that's awesome.
And that just goes to back what Jeremy was talking about with the passion. You know, if you know the story so well, you can't cheat it. The story.
No, they can tell, you can tell comic book fans right away and all. Yeah. And like when they're full of it, you're just like, come on, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's gotta be amazing to be able to take part in that creative experience for something that you're a super fan of already.
Yep.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Dream come true.
I mean, we have pictures of us, you know, the first time we went to Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. At Marvel. And at this point, Marvel was on top of, I think it was a Mercedes dealership. Mm-hmm. And like, there's pictures of me and Jeremy, and we're in front, like you see Marvel behind our heads. And I'm like this in front of like the first car we rented it, you know, in LA, which is like, I think a Corvette convertible where I got sunburn all over my freaking head. But yeah, I mean, it's just like who does that? Nobody's going to take it outside Marvel, you know, like there's a passion for it. So, you know,
do you still get really excited for this stuff, or is it kind of got a little desensitized for you?
No,
every time it's just inspired. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. There's awesome. No, I mean, you know, probably what made Perception come to life was a lot of like pre-gym workout supplements, I would say. when our kids were very young and we'd go to the gym together and like really just like no steroids, just, you know, liquids, but almost as
powerful. A lot of caffeine.
you know, Rockstar, Red Bull. I mean, we would walk into meetings, I'll be like, hold on, I got to stop at like CVS and just get me a rock star. I just need a little boost. And then we'd go in there and, yeah, and we would kill it. And I'd walk out of there and be like, I don't know what I just said, but I hope we got the project because I have no memory of it. But no, I mean, we still, to this day, we get a call from Marvel and it's like I get, we get goosebumps.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great there. You guys definitely paid your dues for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an honor. We're so, you know, proud to be on their short list of vendors and studios that reach out to, you know, on a consistent basis. It's like, sometimes, you know, I can't even believe it. So yeah, we never get desensitized to it. We never take it for granted. And every time we get an opportunity, it's like the first time.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What I find really interesting about your work as well is that when you're putting these like these futuristic creations on screen, everybody's watching that. It's kind of inspiring, like next generation of technology. You've gotten to like actually participate in creating that technology as well. Was that something that you guys thought would be happening, like when you started the company?
No, not at all. I mean, we would come up with like, so for Iron Man 2, you know, we're like, he's dying of palladium, right? That's what's going through. So I haven't seen it in a while. I gotta watch it again. But I'm pretty good with the memory on the Marvel stuff. Yeah. Ask me what Dota's birthday is. I have no clue. they tell us like, all right, here's this scene. He's looking in a mirror, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like, well, the mirror should be digital because here we are. We designed his phone and the smart TV. So now we're stepping into like more scenes for us to, you know, possibly get involved with. And we designed it. And then literally, I think at CES the next year, or maybe 2 years later, like Samsung and all these companies were coming out with this smart mirror. And I'm like looking at Jeremy, like, this is freaking crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, who knew? Like, and then the other part of me was just like, well, why didn't we build one? You know, like we should be walking around with the first mirror built by Tony Stark. But no, I mean, if a lot of it is timing, being in the right place at the right time, definitely hustle. You know, there's a lot of hustle involved. But I think whatever we imagine the company to be, it always seems to surprise me. Like we get a call from something. It's just like, you know, if you ask me like if we were going to work on a car, let alone the Ford GT, like when we walked into Ford, I almost fell to my like on my knees when I saw this car.
You looked lightheaded.
I was.
And it wasn't the fumes from the body shop.
No. And I'm red. I'm pretty red right now. I look like I was like pale. Yeah.
And Mustang red.
It was out of control.
You know, when we started, there's no way we could have predicted this was the path, you know, that the company would take. But every step along the way really kind of makes sense, right? It kind of, when you look back, you know, all the dots connect and, you know, it's definitely not a straight line. It was a meandering, you know, road to get to where we are. I think we read the situations, I think for the most part, correctly and turned in the right direction when we needed to make those turns. It's kept us going. But, you know, using the work in Iron Man 2 as a stepping stone into technology, never would have predicted that ever. But it makes total sense, right? I mean, you look back on it, it's like, okay. And more than anything, what we both, you know, come to really appreciate and really understand and grasp is the story behind it and what a great story it is. And that's been really compelling, you know, in building, you know, new clients and new relationships and even talking to guys like you, you know, who see that, yeah, this is pretty fascinating. The way this company has evolved and like, you know, there's not really, I don't think there's another company with, you know, a story even close to it. So it's very unique.
Can't imagine. Yeah. Like even when you're talking to Doug and all like him saying like his like one of his first jobs with you was like doing like Gillette razor commercials. And then like, he's designing like the Hummer and then,
oh man,
it was great to hear his perspective on it because we, you know, like he remembers his first day. Everybody remembers their first day of work, first day of school. Mm-hmm. I think you asked him what his first day was like, first week.
Yeah,
and like, you know, I hadn't thought of that in 11 years. I think it's 11 years, right, Danny? He's been with us
11. It might close, be going on 12.
Maybe, yeah, 12. Who knows? But like, he remembers like every detail of it, and it just gave us both such a kick.
That's awesome
to hear him retell it.
Yeah, when I heard it, I was just like, you know, me being on the other side, the person calling him be like, hey, man, you know how to build the Gillette razor? And here I am, you know, because I don't know if he probably knows this because we're pretty straight up with Doug. But, you know, at first, you know, we were pretty much a 2D studio.
Okay.
And Jeremy and I were like, all right, what's that next thing we got to get to? You know, and we were like, we got to get a 3D person in here. And here comes this little kid named Doug Appleton right out of school.
Yeah.
And he shows us his reel. And I'm like, this is from this company called, I'm not even going to say it because I'm not even going to advertise them, but it rhymes with a bad word and it ends in UCK. I'm not going to say the rest. And I'm John, who's our creative director at the time, is like, yeah, you know, I don't know. We're like, yeah, you know, his style is different. It's not really what we're looking for. I'm like, nah, I think this kid's good. I think he's, you know, let's just bring him in before this other company hires him because he interned at that place. And I'm like, this kid's going to change our world. He's 3D guru, right? and then that's why we got a call for this Gillette thing. And I'm just like, all right, well, I'm going to make this kid prove himself. Because if he doesn't, then Jeremy and John are going to think I'm an idiot for hiring this kid. And I'm like, yo, build a Gillette razor. See you Monday. Pretty much how it kind of played out. And then he did. And then he's still here.
Yeah, like his passion matches your guys' his passion as well, which I guess that's funny. Did you pick up that in the interview? Like, you're like, oh, you're a Marvel fan? All right. Yeah.
I think that came out pretty early.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, he's been at a couple of Comic Cons in outfits. I'm not going to tell you which ones because I don't know if he shared that with you, but.
Yeah, no, it's so cool that you guys had like really humble beginnings and then just picking the right choices and the right movements and going and like just pivoting at the right pinnacle moments, like you guys said. And being able to get those opportunities and like really proving yourself and working through it.
You were like doing it for the right reasons too. Mm-hmm. You know, like being driven by passion, that seems to be a boon as well.
It wasn't always the right decision, like I said earlier. You know, but you just got to make one. And then we did. Sometimes it's like, oh, you know, maybe we should, you know, build an audio suite in our studio. And we, you know, we were like toying with it. We were like buy something. We're like, nope, bad idea. Switch. And then we would, you know, switch out of it. But, you know, just got to do it.
And you did mention you had a list of clients you want to work with. And you said you have whittled it down quite a bit. Is there still like a few outstanding ones you haven't been able to work with yet?
Under Armour.
Okay.
One that's been on the list. And we actually went up there for some meetings and stuff like that. And it was like, again, during this this workout, very short window of my life, very long window of Jeremy's. But, you know, like we saw this brand and we were like, man, it's still like I put it on. I'm like, I feel like a superhero. Everything always relates to superheroes.
Yeah, course, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you put on this, like, I'm going to call it spandex, but everybody knows it's not, but this breathable mesh fabric. Right. And you put it on. I'm like, I go to the gym with Jeremy. I'm like, man, I feel like I bench pressed 300 pounds today, dude. Let's throw it on, you know, probably that and a mixture of whatever cocktail we had that morning.
A couple Red Bulls.
Yeah, exactly. That was one that we met a bunch of times and nothing came out of it. So if anybody at Under Armour listens to your podcast, they should call us because I got some ideas that are going to blow their minds.
What about you, Jeremy? Any big ones you haven't worked with yet?
You know, I think the rocket companies would be great. I can't say if we have or haven't worked with any of them because of in ridiculous NDAs. So I'm not going to step into that. You know, that's just so exciting and interesting to me to see all of, you know, the flights and William Shatner going up into space. And there's so much potential in that whole, you know, industry that I'd love to. And I think it makes sense for us to get involved in it.
Yeah, designing the UI for a rocket ship is a big boon from the Hummer. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, we may or may not have had a little taste of that already, but we would like a lot more.
That's cool.
Any of your current work that you're able to discuss? I know you've recently just been nominated for some Emmys for WandaVision. I'm assuming you guys are going to get nominated next year for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, What If, Loki. Is there any other things you worked on recently that you would like to share?
We did the titles for Shang-Chi. You guys have seen that.
I look for your name at the end. Like every time I see Marvel, I look for Perception.
Yeah, we did the titles at the end of that, and some of the graphics and screen graphics in the car. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a car scene which we did some center stack graphics for. We're working on a couple of upcoming features, which I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about, so I'll leave it at that. There's some big ones on the horizon for sure.
There's actually a couple that are not Marvel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
Somewhat related, but not Marvel. Somewhat related, but not Marvel. That's my clue. So you'll have to figure out. I'm leaving some breadcrumbs out there.
Leaving in suspense.
Yeah. And then there's also some, we have a couple of car projects going on as well.
Okay.
Automotive
And what about technology? Any like thing, like any technology related stuff that you guys are working on?
There's something with a big man. So hard to do with a big tech company.
Okay,
but
okay.
I consider the automotive projects technology because these cars are now like, you know.
Yeah, they're loaded with supercomputers. Yeah,
yeah. It's not my 89 Mustang GT now. It's a whole different breed of vehicle. So,
are you mostly doing the user interface with these, or are you doing like AR as well?
In the cars or just the projects in general?
Just in the tech projects in general, yeah.
It's a mix of both.
And you did mention some of the NDAs. I mean, what were some of your like more outstanding NDAs, like stuff you've been waiting on? I know when I talked to Doug, you said the Hummer stuff like took forever before we could start talking about it. I mean, do you have any like long-term NDAs that are going to come to fruition soon or stuff that's still years out?
Well, there's something that Jeremy was kind of mentioning that we're never until probably when I die, I won't even be able to say anything.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
There's
some of them that are pretty brutal. And that's the tough part on the tech side is that.
Yeah, because they're like company proprietary secrets. Like they can't share that kind of stuff for years. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're working on stuff that's very forward looking in like, you know, the deepest innovation labs and Skunk Works divisions of the biggest tech companies. So, you know, the trust and the secrecy is really important. We take it very seriously. And again, you know, it's something that we're quite used to with Marvel as well. So,
I'm sure their stuff's just as secure as like the NSA stuff you guys are working on.
Very much so. Our studio is Fort Knox. You know, everybody who works with us and works there understands, you know, quote, the rules of the road, what you're allowed to do, say, post, or, you know, mostly not, because it's very serious stuff.
I know when we talked to Doug, I did ask him, since he's such a big Marvel fan, is it hard for him to like work on these projects and know like some of the stuff so far in advance? Because you guys do get some advanced knowledge.
But Jeremy probably runs into this too, because this son's younger, but let's like
he's pressing you for info.
Right. They'll give us scenes to look at and stuff like that. And then I get home and he's like, "What'd you do at work today, Dad?" I'm like, "Oh, nothing."
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy. So, I mean, there's spoilers and stuff. I don't know. Sometimes we get it without audio. Sometimes we get scenes with audio, so you don't know where in the movie it is. You know, Doug got sent out a couple of times and watched the whole film. And Jeremy and I have done it too. And it's just like, man, that kind of ruined it. I wanted to see it, you know, on the, you know, finished team, you know.
Right.
And then we go see it with the team and it's like that totally changed, you know, like 80% of it changed. So.
Yeah. Cause you're seeing like the really rough stuff before they put a lot of like the polish on.
Sometimes
this.
It's still green screens and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
It is pretty cool though, that, you know, having kids now that are old enough to appreciate films and, you know, again, it's amazing that the generational aspect of these characters and these stories, you know, the same stories that I loved as a kid and comics that I read with my dad, cause he used to take me to the comic store and, you know, we'd watch Superman, you know, whatever the films were when I was a kid. And I'm doing the same thing with my son. And he's just as excited about these characters. I mean, it helped that I, you know, put them in the crib when he was a baby. And I used to like, you know.
Oh, like, I know.
Just, you know, sing little brainwashing, like, you know, the theme songs to Spider-Man. But, you know, it took hold. And now he's a maniac, too, with Marvel That's characters awesome. And loves the films and, you know, watches them on loop on Disney Plus now and loved all the shows on, you know, the WandaVision and Loki and everything. Of course, don't tell him anything. But the fact is, he knows I'm working on stuff and he's just.
That's be so hard as like as a kid with your parents working on such epic projects and they're not going to give you any info.
Yeah, I mean, but the cool thing is when we were at work and, you know, they were at school and it was, you know, pre-COVID. One of the traditions at Perception is we would all go see the first showing on the Friday of one of the film's opening days. So for many of those, I actually took my son out of school.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like a holiday. And I'd take him and Danny would do the same thing, bring him into Manhattan and, you know, he'd be with the team, you know, wearing it, you know, he was very young at the time. We'd make shirts for everybody. The shirt would be down to his, you know, ankles, you know, watching the first showing of like Homecoming, Black Panther, you know, many of them. So that's really cool for me to be able to share that.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
That is cool.
I do have a couple quick lightning round questions for you guys.
Yeah,
sure. So we'll kind of shoot them off quick. Favorite MCU movie, Danny, go.
Oh, only one?
This top one off your head.
Quick.
Wow, it's not so much lightning round for me.
Yeah, I know.
I'm old. I'm on the lead.
All right. Jeremy, go.
I got to say Iron Man 2.
I'd say Iron Man 1.
Okay. What's your favorite MCU show on Disney Plus?
I'm fresh off of What If. I thought What If was amazing.
Yeah, the ending was just, yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Also, I don't want to just like shoot you guys up, but like the opening sequence was insane for What If. It was so cool.
All the voiceover made it.
Dude, it gave me chills. Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright's voice is incredible.
And after the episode, I was like waiting for the credits to see if you guys did it. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
That, you know what? We did that one a really long time ago. That was one of the very first Disney Plus show we worked on.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's been in production a long time. Obviously, with the animation, it takes a very long time to do that type of work. So, yeah, we didn't see anything, of course, but we were working on that like way early 2020. Even 2019, perhaps. I can't even remember, but it was a long time ago we started it.
Yeah, COVID just kind of stuff blends together after a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then, Danny, what about you?
Probably Falcon Winter Soldier.
Okay.
I like those guys.
If you had to pick like a non-Marvel character to do like a movie for, what would be the preferred movie, Danny?
Anything with Ryan Reynolds.
Okay. All right, I respect that. And what about you, Jeremy?
I love Superman. That's still, believe it or not, that's still one of my favorite superhero films of all time, was the very first Superman.
Okay.
Funny, when I interviewed Kevin Feige, he said something similar. He's still, it's one of his favorite
superhero films too. Yeah.
It's so well done. And it's Richard Donner. His mentor. Mm-hmm. It still holds up.
Yeah, and it is. Course, it's a good one.
Which is great.
Not as good as Ryan Reynolds. Come on.
Do you like Ryan Reynolds?
If you guys can pick any franchise to work on besides Marvel, obviously, what would be like a franchise like either like the Aliens franchise or like you said, Superman, like what would be like your dream franchise outside of the Marvel stuff? Jeremy, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to answer for Danny because I know he wants to do a Fast and Furious.
Okay.
Oh, man. You killed my answer.
Well, I know that's where you're going. I can't think of a good franchise off the top of my head.
You guys haven't done Star Wars. I thought Star Wars would
That's true.
Hold on. So I've been fighting for this for years, and I'm like so close to getting Kevin Feige on the phone and say, listen, I want Jeremy to direct the next Hulk series because he knows everything. And everything, I mean everything about that character. I think we just get Batista, we paint him green, and we go old school.
Like I don't hate it at all.
Cut to the real veins in Batista's arms.
If you guys haven't seen it, there's an interview that I did, Danny filmed it, with the creator of the show, The Incredible Hulk, my childhood favorite show. His name is Kenneth Johnson.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. It's in two parts. It's so epic. He actually created the Bionic Woman, $6 Million Man, V, Alien Nation. Like he did science fiction television and he's a legend. And we went out there, I think it was like 2017. He actually was an alumnus of the same college I went to. So I was able to connect with him a long time ago. We connected over a phone call and an email, another story. But we went out there and I interviewed him and just geeked out about the Hulk. And that's one of the highlights of my career.
Well, that was that cool. Day, yeah. Also, because he had all this Hulk stuff from
the
show.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, someone like Jeremy's walking around. I was like, is that what I think it is?
That's awesome.
And I'm like, wait, is that a $6 million man doll? Like, I need to grab that right now. Like, it was crazy.
Lunchbox.
Oh, yeah. Lunchboxes. It was crazy. Yeah. It was nuts. He was super cool. He invited us into his house and
that's so cool.
We were just like shooting the shit for like, I don't know, two, 3 hours. It was great. I want Jeremy to direct the next Hulk.
So Jeremy, what would you do? What would you do for the Hulk movie since the other ones have not been good?
Oh, that's a tough question right off the fly, man. He's got a whole script going. Why don't you read in the script?
Yeah. Send it to me. Yeah. I'll give you my notes.
And I know
he's got it in his drawer on the left hand side of his desk right there. I mean, I'm telling you. It's ready to go. Don't say anything. It's going to spoil it.
No, I mean, I was always just not a fan of the CG Hulk. I just didn't, find it believable. I mean, obviously, it's come a long way since the Ang Lee Hulk, pretty much just a Shrek. It's just impossible. I mean, what they've done with the CG is, it's incredible. You know, in every film he's in, it gets better and better. So, it's harder and harder to make the argument for a live action character, but then you see like a Batista or, you see, you know, some of the giants in like the movie 300, but they just, you know, blew up that guy. And
yeah, get the mountain from Game of Thrones, paint him green, you're good to go.
Yeah, like that to me would have been the way to go. You know, give an actor a shot at it. That's not just in a mocap suit. I just, the believability of that show in the 70s, it's still more believable to me that Bill Bixby changed into Lou Ferrigno than it ever will be to see Mark Ruffalo change into a CG character. Everybody who grew up with that show believed like this guy really became
the Hulk.
Yes, creature. He was terrifying. It was so frightening. His eyes turned white. You know, he's thrown into a dumpster or into down a staircase. His eyes turned white. The music freaked you out. They cut to some other B-roll shot, and they cut back and he's the Hulk, and you believed it. You didn't even need to see the transformation. It's what you filled in your imagination that made it so effective. Like no CG, no special effect could create what your mind can create to fill in those gaps. And to me, that's just the most powerful thing you can do with the character.
Have you shared the old school Hulk show with your son?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my daughter.
Do they hate
it? No, they love it.
Okay.
No, they love it. They just like me when I was a kid. Like, it's really scary. it was very, this guy's getting his ass kicked. You know, this poor guy. He's by different bears, by bullies. You know, he's hitchhiking along the country. You know, it's a tragic story. You know, a lot of it's taken from The Fugitive. He's being chased by this reporter, you know, who won't leave him alone. Yeah, don't get me started on this.
Every 3 years, he busts out the DVDs. He's like, Danny, we got to do a refresh. And then, we just watch him again.
Oh, that's so fun, though. That's
awesome. That is a lot of fun. Yeah,
yeah, it's great.
Are you guys drinking while watching?
Of course.
Yeah.
Dude, at my age, I'm drinking while I'm working. Are you kidding me?
Fair enough. All right. We usually ask one last question for our guests on the podcast. Seamus, if you want to go ahead.
Through all your experience, is there anything that you would tell that you wish you would have known when you started this company, or either starting in the VFX field or they're going to start their own shop? Like, what's some advice you would give them, or something that you wish you would have known when you started this whole venture?
You want to start, Danny?
First thing I would say, and a lot of people told Jeremy, myself, this is that you're crazy. You're going to start your own business. Why do you want to take on that kind of pressure and blah, 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 especially after 9/11, because that's when we started. And I would say, if you got a passion for it, don't let anybody ever stop you, because nobody ever stopped us. You know, you got to be unstoppable.
Be the Hulk.
Yeah. Luckily, I have Hulk as a partner. But you got to have very thick skin. Don't take the word no to heart. Like, if clients call you, you know, you call them and say, I want to work. No, no. You got to work around it. Break through the wall. Whatever it is you got to do, you got to do it.
Send Hulk merchandise if needed.
Hulk smash, yeah.
Yeah, smash through it.
Jeremy, what about you?
You know, something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, or in the last year, if I knew how close we were at some moments that were really low, some really low moments along the way, how close we were to a breakthrough, you know, that would have been nice. Because there were some... Well, you said, what do you wish I knew then that I know now?
I know,
and
absolutely.
And that's the thing. It's like, dude, don't give up. Like, in another few weeks,
yeah, something magical is going to happen.
Like, that's what you want to know, right? In those moments. Because there's moments where we both, is this it? Are we done? Are we done here?
Oh, man.
Are we, you know, we both go, you know, I got to take a walk. Or, you know, you go in the bathroom, you punch the wall. Like, there's tough times. There's tough weeks. There's tough months. There's tough periods. But, you know, sometimes, like, you're literally 1 degree away from some big, you know, breakthrough success. And that's, you know, that would be the most incredible thing to know at those times. But you kind of just have to trust that it's when you're ready to give up, that is the time you shouldn't be doing that, because you're so close. You think you're so far, but you're really so close.
Did a really tough times always come before those times of success?
I don't think every time, but there were times when Jeremy's talking about it. You know, there was a situation when we went down to North Carolina for a speed channel. Now it's for Velocity or something like that, I think. And it was like, you know, we got to get this project. If we don't get this project, like, we got nothing going on. And even before that, I mean, first, what you need to know about perception and everybody that works there is, when we pitch, we go all out. Like, there is no half-ass pitch. It's like full on, or we don't do it. So when we decided, we're going to pitch this, and we went down there, we went in there saying we're pitching this and we're going to win this. And I know it sounds like, I guess, cliche, whatever it is, but you have to, because if you go in there with any doubt, you know, we embellished a little bit, you know, like it was for, was that the one for the towing company, right?
Wrecked.
It was for Wrecked, right. I couldn't remember the name. So we actually, like, we asked the clients to, like, can you give us the room, the conference room, for like just 2 minutes before you guys come in? And they're like, yeah, okay. And they were like, what the hell do these guys want the conference room for? And we just, like, we had car parked. It was for a tow trucking company show, right? It's a reality show. We dressed up as tow truck drivers. We did a video. We went to like Hoboken, New Jersey. We interviewed tow truck drivers. And these guys are cursing.
We made a documentary film.
Made a documentary. And we basically—
That's part of the pitch.
Yeah, we basically turned their conference room into like a tow company. Like, we put tape up, we put car parts. Like, I'm walking in there with bags of car parts. They're like, what's going on? And we pitched it and we walked out of there and we were like, yeah, that was the best we could do. Like, we didn't leave anything to chance. We kicked it out of the, you know, as far as we were concerned, we like knocked the ball out of the park, right? And then, you know, we got back. They call us and like, I think this is how the phone call went. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but it's like, I got some good news and some bad news.
I remember this.
The good news is we want you guys to do the project. The bad news is you're going to have to work with us, meaning this, you know, the speed channel. You know, we were like, ah, yeah, cool, no problem. You know, and then we hang up the phone, like trying to be all cool. And then like we hang up the phone and we're just like, we're going crazy. We're going crazy. It's like, yo, I got to go get a drink because that's, I got to calm down. But I wouldn't say it happened every time like that. But there was times where it was just like, man, I guess, you know, perception is not going to make it.
Oh man.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like talking about like your origin story, it does seem like, oh, all this really good stuff happened and it happened in sequential order. A lot of people don't tell like the bad, like the shitty stuff, like side of it, like where there was like times you guys might've thought like, oh, we're done, or this might not, if this doesn't happen, we're at the closed doors. And like, people always skip those parts of those stories.
It's part of the process. Yeah. It's part of the journey. Like, you know, if you don't have that, then it's not a full picture. You know, you can't have, you know, the highs without the lows. Nothing goes up in a straight line. You know, there's always peaks and valleys, and we've had plenty of both. You know, the trick is to keep it, you know, as minimal as possible and to not give up in those, you know, those low moments. And that's where you got to dig the deepest, and you have to have the faith and the wherewithal to push through it and to know that it's going to turn. It might not turn tomorrow or in a week or in a month, but it's going to turn. And you got to be willing to ride it out. As a business owner, you know, sometimes that means putting more, you know, of yourself on the table and, you know, having to really, you know, carry things for a while.
Yeah, I love the stories when people tell us like, oh, yeah, so Marvel calls you and you're working on the next Marvel prize. Like, no, not exactly how it works.
Because you guys have to pitch and all, right? Like, you guys have to pitch. Yeah.
Even having to pitch or not having to pitch, it's just like people are like, oh, you just picked up the phone for your first project, called them, and you know, you got the job. Like, no, you don't even know what we went through. It's psychotic, the stuff that we used to do to like try and get into these meetings or, you know, certain projects.
What was it within you that kind of gave you that strength to keep going in those darkest times?
Wow.
Deep one.
A lot of what fed me was Jeremy, you know, telling me like, you know, we can't stop. Like,
we won't let each other give up.
Yeah. Like, you know, if I didn't show up for the gym, Jeremy would call me like, yo, you're showing up, right? And I'm like, yeah, I just, my alarm went off a little late, you know, but no matter what, like we always had each other's back. Yeah. So I think that was just like a huge, you know, relief, but at the same time, it also held us accountable. You know, if I didn't do something, Jeremy would be like, yo, dude, like what's up? I think also, for me, like my dad had his own business. He had a restaurant business, which is a really hard business to be in. So he kind of like instilled that whole, type attitude when it came to that stuff. I don't know, you know, I mean, I know Jeremy's parents were super creative, but I think the main thing was just having each other's back. And, you know, cause like when we started this thing, you know, like, yeah, you know, my wife was like, yeah, go for it. But in the back of her head, she was probably like, oh God, this is not, why am I letting him do this? You know, it was like letting me buy a motorcycle. Like, all right, ride it. Just don't get into an accident.
Yeah.
You know? But it was just like, if I'm going to do it with anybody and I'm going to be in the trenches with, I mean, who else do I want to be in the trenches with, but the Incredible Hulk, you know? So, so that's the deal, you know?
All right, guys. Where can our listeners find more of you, your company, all the awesome works you work on? You guys on social media?
Yeah, we're on all the platforms. Well, first off, the website is experienceperception.com. So that's your first stop. Twitter, it's exp_perception. I think Instagram is just experienceperception, all one word. And I believe Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. YouTube channel is Perception NYC, which is our very first web address. It's no longer our web address. It'll still forward to our new web address, but. And did I cover all the socials?
I think so. Yeah. There's so many now. You guys on TikTok? Yeah. Like,
we're working on it. When we go back to the office, I think that's on deck. We're going to start some TikTok.
I can see you guys get the memo. We need to get on TikTok. You're like, what the hell is TikTok?
Yeah. My kids are all over that. And yeah. I don't know. Should Perception have a TikTok? What do you guys think?
I'll do a poll.
We should do a poll, actually.
We really do appreciate talking to you guys tonight. This is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. It was great talking to you guys. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for having us. Had a lot of fun.
You guys have a great night.
All right. You too. Take care.
Bye bye.
Now I'm really digging that they're such like super super fans and super nerds about it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. Like even like they're saying like their competition, like they knew they were better. I don't want to say better. They stood out because like their competition wasn't real fans at the end of the day, where they were Marvel fans. This is what they wanted to do. Like that's so cool.
I like that their passion was kind of like their compass. You hear a lot of people that are really successful talk about how just like falling in love with the work, where it becomes more about that than anything else. And maybe that gives you like the right kind of focus so you can create things that are really great and kind of rise above everyone else. Mm-hmm. At least to enough of a degree where you can do great things.
It's funny with like interviewing Doug previously, like he has a lot of that same passion, and it's cool to see like they kind of share a lot of that, and they kind of like cultivate it, which is really cool.
Culture descends from the top, you know.
Yeah, so it really does.
It seems like they really cultivated a cool space over there.
Yeah,
and I'm excited to see what they continue to put out.
Yeah, especially like Easter egg wise, like some of the stuff they are hinting at, like that has to just be so cool being able to work with like space type shit. Like that's definitely the final frontier. Like that's so cool.
May or may not have worked on that.
But yeah, those guys are cool. I definitely would love to talk to them again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Poison Ivy, right?
That's not Marvel, Seamus.
I was just joking. You're right.
No comment.
Look at me.
Yeah, this guy embarrassed me from the Marvel guys.
I know.